Don Williamson, and I'm joined by my colleague, Kate Hogarth. Kate, this is our second podcast. We were a little bit nervous first time around. Do you think we're gradually getting the hang of this?
Yeah, I think we are slowly getting to grips with all this technology. Soon we'll be old hands.
The old hands, indeed. So I'm delighted to say that our guest interview for this podcast is Sam Dowie, and he's the befriending manager at Teens Plus. Welcome, Sam.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on, Don. Appreciate it.
Great. And well, firstly, thanks for agreeing to help with the podcast. Where are you joining us from?
So I'm currently at Ravenscroft Building, which is where I'm based at, and we're at the south of Edinburgh.
So Sam, before we find out more about Teens Plus, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your personal journey that brought you eventually to your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. I started my role in care with volunteering at a local play scheme after was at a presentation for the leisure scheme. And I went along and volunteered, and I just really enjoyed interacting with young people. I really enjoyed helping people who needed support, and trying to understand the person that was behind the various needs. That was a really interesting kind of unpicking who that person was and how I can help them. I really enjoyed that whole process. And from there, I moved on to working in support work, and that just took me in lots of different directions, working with such a wide range of people, wide range of families in different areas, and accessing lots of different local communities also. And, you know, the turning point for me to pursue a career in care was meeting a young man called Andrew, who had such a complex range of needs. However, you know, we were the same age and we had similar interests, and it just really pinpointed the wealth of purpose that carers have when working with people who need care. It was just the turning point. And I think, you know, Andrew was such a rock. He was so determined in everything that he wanted to achieve. He was so independent. He was so clear in what he wanted as well. And it was my role in being his friend to provide him with those opportunities. And that was absolutely what it was. It was a friendship. And I consider Andrew to be my best friend. Sadly, Andrew's no longer with us in person. However, you know, the long time that we were together and that friendship just totally steered me into the role that I'm in today. And Andrew actually set up Teens. He was the reason Teens exist. He left school, couldn't quite find a service that was right for him. So he created a service that, around him, and people joined it because it was right for them too. And this whole idea of education and pursuing areas to fulfill their desires and what they wanted, the direction that they wanted to live their lives. And Teens, you know, aims to provide that and support people to achieve those experiences in life. And, you know, that transition from childhood into adulthood is quite a complex one. And it's a fantastic experience. So yeah, and Andrew created Teens. He's the reason it exists. He's also responsible for another charity, Sleep Scotland. He's left us with you know, support at the hospital where he was getting cared for. He also is the creator of a book club as well. So that just shows kind of testament of the character of Andrew, and the, you know, the complex part about it is that such a creative individual who has left us with such a fantastic range of resources for us to pursue and develop and help other people grow and develop. He needed my support. So it's a really, you know, it goes back to that wealth of purpose. You know, I feel lucky to have been a part of that life who's created and left us with such an amazing resource to continue.
What a legacy that Andrew leaves behind. And what a great example too, you know, where somebody finds that there isn't the support or services available in the way that they want them, then they decide to go ahead and create that service, which not only, you know, clearly benefits themselves, but will benefit others in the future too. So Sam, can you just tell us a little bit more about those services and the range of supports that you offer at Teens Plus?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great way of describing it. It's a legacy, absolutely, that he has left us with. And yeah, so Teens, we provide an education service in a number of centres in the south of Edinburgh and centrally as well. And how we provide education is very specific to each individual that comes to Teens. And the kind of long-term, short-term, and the medium-term goals that they want to achieve, and we incorporate that with the families and their carers and other services too, to try and keep consistency and provide them with the opportunities to thrive under that. And the ILPs that we provide for our students are very much tailor-made, and they cover a range of areas through communication, independence skills and educational skills and physical activities too, and you build them all around, and you start from a foundation to try and help grow a particular skill or an activity to try and achieve. So for example, you know, a young person wants to go to the gym and they want to do a gym workout. Well, there's lots of parts to that puzzle that you know we need to practice firsthand. So and also the question is asked of how can we help you become as independent as possible and to do that activity, you know, and little simple things like getting on a bus, getting off the bus, and then going into the foyer and interacting with the person behind the counter, handing over money. So there's lots of money skills to do there in terms of making sure that they're safe using money independently too. So that we've not even got to the gym yet, and there's already potentially years and years worth of work there to do and help a student become as independent as possible. And we try and facilitate that for our young people. So you know that's the real meaty part of what we do. We are an educational service. We provide care and support that's specific to each individual. We also have a befriending service, which we try and apply all the learning that's done in Teens and use those skills that they feel confident and comfortable with in the community in the evenings and weekends. And we've had some great success with that. And you know, some of our young people have transitioned out of Teens into supported accommodation, and that's been right for them. It's been brilliant. It's great to see them flourish in this independent life, and interacted with I bumped into one of our young people at a disco pre-COVID, and it was just brilliant to see how much they'd come along and the life that they were living. It was just, they loved it. It was brilliant. And you know, I remember right back at the start when we were just helping them make a cup of tea. You know, it's the journey that we all go through and learning and develop, and we still do. And our young people are no different, and they just need a little bit extra care and support to get there.
Good.
The buildings provide us with a great space, and you know, within the buildings we have a fantastic team of people too. We've got some brilliant, brilliant project workers who are just so motivated and creative, and they've built up such a strong relationship with the students that they can also almost identify the route that the students want to go down and then provide them with this dynamic way of education and thinking on their feet whilst also preparing for sessions. So we have a range of tutors that also support in providing materials and resources to try and make things just as easy and as simple and fluent for the students as well. You know, I think the idea of sitting behind a desk, which is quite traditional, it's not necessarily right for our young people. And you know, the range of needs that support teams supported teams is quite vast. There's a whole spread of support needs and communication challenges. The real aim for us is just to utilise as many resources and utilise as many resources as possible. And you know, we've got some fantastic resources such as Talking Maths. We use that quite regularly. There's Provable to Go for some of our students who are described as being non-verbal. However, as we know, you know, communication is such a complex area that, you know, Provigo to Go app that provides apps on a device for them to request and communicate. It's brilliant. Actually, one of our students within their apps has a whole folder for jokes. And what a fantastic way for him to come and interact with his peers by pressing a button that tells a joke. And that's such a natural way of communicating. But it's such a fun way as well, which adds real value and purpose for young people.
It's hard to believe that it's 12 months now since we were hearing the stories of COVID-19 on the news and beginning to wonder how it might affect us and our lives in Scotland. And then, of course, in March 2020, everything just completely flipped on its head and radically changed our lives as we know it. What impact did this have on Teens Plus and its staff, Sam, and also on those who are your students and their, you know, parents and carers too?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right when you mentioned that it got flipped in its head. And, you know, from my personal experience and my observations within the parents, carers and students was definitely that. I'd probably go to say that it was quite a traumatic experience for a number of reasons. I think, you know, on reflection and reflecting back to early last year, we are a service that pride ourselves in interaction and providing people opportunities to develop social skills and work out in the community, work quite closely with staff, quite staff intensive as a project. And then, you know, those internal factors that we can control and help people thrive on, there was this massive external factor, which was completely out with our control. It was COVID, and that basically told us that everything we know how to do, everything we're confident in doing, and everything we know that our students can thrive on is now no longer safe. And I think that was quite a challenging concept for everybody involved, more so parents and carers and our students. And for us as an organisation, it was like a bowling ball that just really came and smashed all the pins of how we knew how to provide our service. And those ties that we knew that could connect us to help our young people and our parents and carers, they were cut all of a sudden.
And what did this mean for your organisational model? Clearly you've said everything that you knew about delivery, you were now being told it wasn't safe, but you knew that there would still be a level of need for your students and for the parents and carers. So I'm interested in hearing what sort of process you went through in working out what options were available to you, and what did you have to take into consideration, and how did you get from everything we know has to stop to here's what we're going to move forward with?
Yeah, within the role I have at Teens is, you know, I'm a befriended manager and a team leader. And from there, my role really is to provide people with a service, you know, the operational part of that, and supporting a team of people to provide that and engage with young people. And the experience I had was that we were unable to do it. That was it. We didn't understand COVID as a nation, and we didn't have clear guidance for services. So it was fundamentally unsafe to be in contact with people. That was made clear. And I think from me, that was really just cutting my legs from under me. I wasn't quite sure how to really meaningfully help and support and provide this educational aspect of Teams. We have fantastic creative staff, there's no doubt about that. But we were so used to those interactions and building based and community and unfortunately, those experiences, we were told to just stay home. And that was the kind of brick wall that we had to somehow find our way through. And we spent, you know, a number of weeks trying to understand, as I'm sure the whole nation was at this point. You know, it was quite a traumatic experience for many, well, all sectors. But for us at Teens, we needed to try and do something. So that led us to Zoom calls and video calls and just reaching out. And we found great success and challenges with Zoom. As you know, the interactions over a computer is nowhere near interacting face to face. And also the way Zoom works is, you know, the loudest is heard and things like that. So it took us, you know, once we practiced it, we realized that actually we're going to have to do a whole chunk of education around Zoom calls for young people to try and use Zoom independently. And that was a really interesting experience. And I think, actually a story just from the other day, but, you know, those sessions still continue. And I was in the building in the hall, and they were practicing Zoom calls, and there was four students practicing Zoom calls, and they were taking turns, and they were doing an activity, and lo and behold, like everybody else, one of our students was on mute. So I just heard another student shout from the room, you're still on mute. It's you know, it just shows, you know, that the whole experience of using video calls, that there's a degree of education that you have to start off, a baseline foundation for it to really thrive on. And thankfully we've got there now. So once we got a bit of a grasp on Zoom calls, and they started to develop, and, you know, students that found value in that sort of delivery were taking that offer up. We then moved forward to getting some clearer guidance on how we could actually provide more meaningful contact support. And I think that was the moment, especially for me, it kind of felt like we were all pedaling like mad, but the wheel wasn't quite touching the tarmac. So at that point, you know, understanding PPE, having access to PPE, understanding the clear guidance and risk assessments that went along with the practical element of going out in the community and supporting people in the community, those little intricate details need to be clearly put in place and then passed on to staff. So, you know, kind of early summer, we started to provide home support. So as a building support, that was our bread and butter. All of a sudden we're doing Zoom calls, and now we're doing home support. And so the home support was basically going out to people's homes and providing them with some care. And they started off with just going for walks to try and understand how we could actually apply this new way of working with PPE and social distancing, whether it was right for the students. You know, turning up to somebody's door with a face mask on can be quite a scary prospect. And from there, we practiced it started to work, and I felt myself getting so caught up in the details of how we can provide the support, that when it came to and actually went to one of our students' houses to go out for a walk, from the moment we set off to the moment we got back, it was just full-on chat, so engaging, so much fun. Asking me questions about every single staff member, every single student. We're doing video calls en route to connect to people. And it took me right back to the value and what it is that the care sector does and how we actually help people face to face. So it threw me right back to where I was pre-COVID, and just the solid impact that we can have on young people.
Thanks, Sam. That was really interesting hearing about how you approached it in the immediate first lockdown. In terms of getting that balance between providing the service and understanding what the requirements were, where did you go to for support as an organisation? Was there something that would have helped you through that process in terms of understanding it, getting to grips with it, and then moving forward?
Yeah, I think the overwhelming understanding that I had after that, you know, the initial period, once I started to get my head around how we could provide meaningful support, was just the length of time that things took, and rightfully so. I mean, we were in an extremely dangerous position. We really didn't fully understand the implications that COVID would have on our young people and staff and the wider community. However, that I'm not sure that was, you know, that was a real challenge for our parents, carers, and our young people, to not have any light at the end of the tunnel. It's just very closed off, hold off until we hear otherwise. And I think that's, you know, right, but challenging too, to continue trying to do what we do. So for me, there was a lot of kind of waiting and for this kind of clear guidance that was going on. And there was a lot of work going on behind the scenes at Teams with, you know, the Care Commission, Health Protection Scotland, and the Social Care Partnerships. It played a key part in how we deliver our service safely. And I think what it would have helped if, you know, things were a little bit quicker, but, you know, how do you do that? Another area that impacted teens, I think, was we support people from different council areas, which meant that we have to do a lot of communication with those different council areas. And, you know, that just requires a lot of time and utilising of the resources that we have at Teams to try and make sure that we're doing the right thing as well, first and foremost, and making sure that we're following the guidance correctly. And I think the social care partnerships have been great. I understand things take a bit longer. However, we're dealing with something that we've never dealt with before, so there has to be careful thought before you jump in 2 feet first. And I think we're in a position now where we can make decisions relatively quickly in comparison to the start, which has been an interesting learning experience for me, especially. There's almost, you know, at the start, I kind of felt like, oh, you know, we can go out and do things and achieve things and do it without this. Let's check with Health Protection Scotland. Let's help with, you know, the Care Commission. Let's check with the Social Care Partnerships first. There's an extra layer of communication now in everything that we do, which impacts the speediness that we can provide the support that we know we can do. But thankfully, we're definitely on the right path, and the way that we are supporting our students is gradually increasing, even though there's a bit of a wave that COVID seems to be happening throughout the country. However, it seems like Teams is just gradually rebuilding from there, which is really positive for me in my role, and it's definitely a motivator. And I know the staff are loving the contact that we have with the students now more than ever.
So there's been some real positives over the past year. You know, that wonderful experience of going for a walk with one of the students and just re-engaging with why you provide the service you do. What other positives are you going to take forward from your experiences over the past year? Are there things that you've learned about yourself or the organisation, or opportunities that you think have emerged as a result of this that you're keen to take forward?
Yeah, there has been some positives. I mean, there's clearly been overwhelming challenges, and I think we can we have to acknowledge those going forward. There's been a real impact, especially for parents, carers, and young people and our students. And we may see a hangover once things start to get back to normal and people re-engage with services and how that transpires. But you're right, there are some positives, and there's definitely given us a bit of a shake in how we can be adaptable and try and provide sessions that are right for everybody and are in the capacity that's right for them. And there's huge opportunities now to be dynamic and work closer with families and get them more involved in the holistic approach, rather, you know, coming to teens and doing this great work. There's a lot of consistency that could potentially occur now with the transference of skills. And I think that's been one of the positives with the home support, for example, that we've managed to engage with parents and carers a little closer than we maybe have in the past. And that's been quite an interesting experience and definitely given us food for thought going forward. There's also been a hub set up for transitioning young people into teens. You know, we were transitioning people into teens during a pandemic. And that was from a need where young people were leaving school with complex needs and they didn't have a service to go to. So we started a hub to give them some aspects of adult care, and hopefully that'll emerge, that they'll transition into teens if it's right for them. And that's been quite a positive experience to be part of this call for help and this need that we're trying to meet.
You've talked very clearly about how you're keen to be guided by your students and by their parents and carers, and that you're putting them at the very centre of what you do. How are you able to keep them involved in planning for what your future services might look like, and also this preparedness that you're wanting to have in case this sort of thing happens again? What process is Teens Plus going through to keep them involved in that future planning?
Yeah, that's something that's in the key of how we're going to rebuild after COVID. I think involving our students has always been key to teens and how they want to live their lives, but also how the organisation is going to function for the future too. And a lot of our students' interactions with teens is trying to build their own specific learning plan, their ILP, individual learning plans. And that's a key part of the value in their lives, and you know, what direction is it that they want to pursue. I think it's quite important that we involve parents and carers and students in the discussions going forward, because the impact is so personal to each individual. I feel like the impact on our families in particular are very specific to each. And I certainly wouldn't want to speak on behalf of parents and carers and the wider community as well. It's such a intimate, personal impact that COVID's had for them. I feel like the rebuilding process is going to be quite personal, and I hope that we can try and involve that aspect in that rebuilding process. To try and make sure that things are done at the right pace and the right speed.
Thanks, Sam. I mean, that's been so interesting just to hear about the experience that you've been through over the last 11 months or so. And I really liked the bowling ball analogy of what happened at the beginning, that sense of, you know, everything being thrown up in the air. And our first podcast was with Mark Bevan, CEO at Lukey House, and he referred to a deficit of purpose at the beginning. That sense that when it all sort of came crashing down, that we lost that compass that we all rely on so much to give us that sort of direction of travel.
Yeah, that's a really interesting discussion point. And I'm privileged to be in a position where I'm leading a team to provide care for young people that need it. And in terms of leading a team, you know, the concept of that deficit of purpose was absolutely true. It really, when I listened back at that, he said it quite eloquently, and certainly how I felt at the beginning. And I know for much of my team, you know, we were so proud and passionate about the way that we were delivering our service. And all of a sudden we were just unable to do that. And then, you know, from my perspective, I felt a bit of a loss of, you know, how to provide people with that purpose and with, you know, that's such a joyful experience, engaging with our young people and being part of their lives and helping them grow and become independent. And I just wasn't able to provide that for a staff team. So the values were there, and I couldn't quite connect the dots. You know, I mentioned earlier on about, you know, the ties were cut, and that was absolutely true in the beginning. And on reflection and looking back at that role that I had at the time, it was quite challenging. But at the same time, we're in a position now where, as you said, we're in the thick of it, and we're moving forward and we're growing, and there's such vast opportunities to learn and think creatively and think outside the box and come up with new ideas that still provide us with that opportunity to follow our values. And you know, I cannot credit the team I've got around me enough. They're just superstars. They're brilliant, highly motivated, so determined, and the relationships they have with the young people has been, you know, the length of time that our staff have spent with the students, we've really called on that over the pandemic. You know, the strength between the connections that we have with staff and students has helped us continue that engagement. I'm not sure we'd be able to do it for a sustained period of time, any, you know, longer than like 2-3 years, because, you know, things change. But over the past year, all that commitment and time that's gone on prior to COVID is came to fruition with, you know, it helped engage in Zoom calls, it helped engage in home support, it's helped engage in coming back to teams, because it was people they knew, people they trusted, and we're rebuilding on a platform that we'd already established. It's a really interesting point in terms of going forward and how we adapt and provide this creative environment, which we know we can do.
So we're almost a year into the pandemic, but with the benefit of hindsight, Sam, what advice would you give yourself back in March, if you could?
Well, I probably would have taken a substantial amount of shares in face masks, and I think that would have kept the charity sector sustainable for the future. No, that's a joke. It's such a huge opportunity to reflect. You know, it's really difficult to provide a concrete answer to that, because we're in a different emotional reactive position now towards COVID than we were in the beginning. We were really thrown, we had no idea what now would look like. And I think for me going forward with a situation like this, I feel like naively, and I'm sure many of us felt like this, and I'm not alone, but naively, I kind of felt like this would be over in a few months, or this would be, you know, we'd get past this and we'd just go back to normal. And I think, you know, that initial month stage of this sort of cauldron of chaos that we were in, I definitely think the idea of forward planning and really thinking about the longevity of this challenge is something that I'll definitely have, you know, that'll stay with me for the rest of my life, I think. And I'm sure that will for many, this could last a lot longer. And are you prepared for that? And have you learned enough about this idea of going, we'll do what we can and, you know, things will go back to normal. I'm not sure I'll ever think like that again. The world changes and adapts very quickly, especially in the climate that we live in now with technology, etc. Just the progression of that area is just that. I mean, I struggle to use iPhones now. And I think it's really important, especially as a service provider, that we don't allow our young people that we care for to fall behind in that aspect, and we still provide them with the opportunities to engage in the world as quickly as they can. And, you know, with COVID will bring a lot of changes. So the next stage for us is to try and identify how we are going to live our lives and make sure that we have the access of that learning for our young people too. And I don't think Zoom will just disappear. I think that's going to be a huge aspect of our lives going forward. It's definitely going to save businesses huge amounts of money. I mean, you look at meetings where people travel to and from, that's just, you know, very basic level. And another example is, you know, supermarkets have self-scanners. You know, that's a whole new way that, I certainly didn't think would exist as a kid. That would have been on a movie, this whole idea of self-scanning and computerised. The world's going to change, and I think we've got a responsibility to provide our young people with the options to engage in those changes too.
Sam, thanks very much for your time. That's been a really fascinating conversation. It's been a real pleasure to spend that time with you and just learn about what's been happening at Teens Plus. So thanks again. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, it's been great, Don. Thanks for having me. It's really nice to chat about the things that we've discussed.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Shared Care Scotland. If you'd like to find out more information about the organisation, please visit our website, sharedcarescotland.org.uk.